Go ahead, Gox.
Welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right, Movie the Podcast.
Yeah.
The unbroken chain continues.
That's right.
The connection this week, I believe, was Cranston
it
to
was
get us
Bryan
from Godzilla to
it was Bryan Cranston. Yes,
to Nicholas Winding Refn's Drive.
Yeah. This was a Sean pick. Sean couldn't make it this morning. Not that anybody cares when I upload this on Thursday, but it is very early Sunday morning. This is the brunch crew. I fucked up. I should have had a Bloody Mary, you know, since this is a mimosa.
A mimosa.
A mimosa. Also, apparently I have a horrible Baltimore accent, which I've never reckoned with, but someone from.
Wait, who said that?
I'll tell you after the show.
First of all,
mm-hmm.
horrible.
Well, you know,
shouldn't be part of the conversation. Second of all, you sound like all of us, and yes, we don't sound like them.
Apparently, we got it down there in the ocean, hon.
we got a horrible Baltimore accent, like whatever. Like no. We sound like newscasters. We sound like the
center. Yeah.
We're
very professional newscasters.
We're not nasal enough. Like, and we're not calling everybody dummy and saying two. So like, there's two Baltimore accents and we're neither one. So what do you want?
But yeah, we watched Drive.
Horrible, bound of horrible.
I mean, I put horrible on it because I think it's horrible, but it's very. I still think it's funny because I don't hear it. We watched Drive. I'm gonna bury the lead here. I love Nicholas Winding Refn. He's probably one of my favorite directors. So my opinion on this movie is gonna be pretty rock solid. But it was a joy to watch this again because I haven't watched it in years. Yeah. And this is one of the few times, I don't know if anybody noticed, but I splurged and downloaded the 4K Blu-ray onto the Plex, so it looked extra good. I think we can all agree, even I don't know everybody's take on this movie, but like visually this movie it looks amazing. Like the lighting and I just think like Nicholas Winding Refn has an impeccable eye. I don't know who does his cinematography, but like, I don't know, for a guy that's colorblind, like this guy understands lighting and color and it's really good. But anyway,
this is my first Nicholas Winding Refn film. Not.
Oh yeah.
This was my first experience, but Drive was my first time. It's not his first movie, right?
No. He made, I highly recommend him, but his first couple of movies are the Pusher movies, which I really like, which aren't like, they're more like kind of low stakes, like street level crime movies. They don't have like the visual flair that he's known for now. They're really, really good. It's three movies and they're all based around like this crime family more or less. And the Mads Mikkelsen is in it and he's excellent. And Mads Mikkelsen's great. He's the reason I know who Mads Mikkelsen is because of Nicholas Winding Refn. And Mads also is in Valhalla Rising, which
yeah,
I really like.
Yeah.
He's fucking badass in that movie. But anyway, yeah. We'll get into it.
The Pusher movies are like Norwegian or Scandinavian,
Dutch,
right? They're not
Dutch.
Dutch. Yeah. I think I've seen the first one. I think on your recommendation.
All three of them are good. I'd recommend the first two are the best. I really like the third one, but the third one is kind of polarizing. But anyway, well, we'll get into all that. I had to pop a Zen early this morning to get my podcasting juices flowing. Gross. What did y'all watch this week? Mr. Alex.
I mean, I have a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, did you watch Godzilla?
No.
I did.
I'm just interested to see what you would think of Godzilla. I don't know.
Oh, I've seen it before. It's terrible.
Oh, you've seen it? Yeah, you didn't even like it. Okay.
No.
Yeah, it's a real mess, like we talked about on the show. I mean, like, I don't really understand the point of that movie. Dogs, we'll get into your opinion of it in a second when we go to you. But Alec, what did you watch, my friend?
I didn't watch a whole lot this week because we were on vacation.
How was NOLA? I've never been.
It was incredible.
Yeah. Did you get a beignet?
Did you get a po' boy?
Yeah, I got several beignets and several po' boys.
Hell yeah.
I don't get the authentic po' boys because I don't like oysters.
But yeah, they're gross. I like oysters, but I don't know. They're just fine.
But shrimp, the fried shrimp po' boys down there are incredible. Oh,
yeah.
Hell yeah. They don't just fry them with like batter. They use like fish fry.
Oh, and
the seasoning is so good. Like
sounds delicious.
The first place I got one, the shrimp were huge, and like it ruined the rest of them. Like the rest of them were I got after that were still good, mm-hmm. but the first one was like the best, and nothing else could hold up to the first one I had. And the beignets were good.
Yeah,
we went to the French Quarter, and then we drove to. We drove to Biloxi, Mississippi, and drove along the Gulf Coast, which is absolutely gorgeous.
It sounds rad.
And then drove to Mobile, Alabama, which was really cool.
Home of Forrest Gump.
Well, he's from
Battery, isn't
it? Nope. Oh, no, he wasn't from
Mobile. He's from Greenbow.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Bubba's from Biola Battery. Greenbow does not exist. We drove through Biola Battery.
Oh, no shit.
And I'll try to remember to get the picture and send you guys. Stacy took a picture of like a river in Biola Battery that is just lined with like shrimp boats.
Oh, no shit.
Like it's like 100% like accurate from the movie. There's like, it's just lined with shrimp boats on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
R.I.P. Bubba.
Mm-hmm. Bubba.
But we watched a bunch of, the Lifetime movies again.
Hell yeah.
But I'm not going to talk about...
Wait, again? Like a repeat viewing or new...
Yeah, no. you went back.
Like continually. Like
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like we're not stopping because they're easy to watch and some of them are hilarious.
Are they? They're generally pretty short too, right? Like I don't imagine...
I don't think any of them have been over an hour and a half.
Yeah, I mean,
they're all alone. Like an hour 20, hour 22, hour 24.
Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, that alone gives them, like, you know, a gravitas. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But the one real movie I did watch.
Real was, movie?
Thor, Love and Thunder.
Ah. A very maligned. I haven't gone
back to that yet.
Very maligned Marvel film.
Yeah, I really don't know why. Like,
yeah, it's fine. I think it just didn't live up to, like, it's not as good as Ragnarok.
And no,
I think
but there's only like two other Marvel movies that are as good as Ragnarok.
I agree.
Far as I'm concerned, Ragnarok is outstanding. Probably the Winter Soldier and Infinity War.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, I think my biggest problem with the movie is that I think Christian Bale is really, really fucking good, and I wish he was in it more. I mean, but that's like a left-handed compliment. You know what I mean? Like, every time he's in the movie, it's great, and I wish he was in it more. That's all. Like, I love the whole black and white part, like, towards the end. Well, actually, it is the end, isn't it? Like,
it's close to the end.
That shit is fantastic. But.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know. I think it's a lot of fun. And, like, people are like, oh, it's too funny. It's too, like, have you not seen the other Thors?
Yeah, I mean,
like they're all like that. This wasn't to be any more like jokey or silly than Ragnarok, and Ragnarok people love.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Part of the backlash is obviously from incels because, oh, you have a girl Thor. Like, why you gotta shoehorn a girl Thor in?
And you know, speaking on that, which irritates me to no end, is that all these, you know, we've talked about this 1,000 times, but like, because Marvel movies are so big, there is a huge contingent of people that they have no interest in comic books, right? But they love Marvel movies. So they want to tell you about, well, you know, there's no girl Thor. It's like, she was in the comics, like for like 2 years, she was Thor. And then now you got, Lady Silver Surfer. That's also canon. Like that is in the comics. Like, Stop freaking out about every fucking woman in a movie. Like, these things are canon, and it's like, also, who cares? Who gives a shit?
Obviously, who cares? That's the first thing.
Yeah.
But like these people, they, not that these movies can't be for everybody because they're just movies, but like it just doesn't fit into their narrow, shitty worldview. Like, oh, you're just shoehorning in girl characters. Like, no, all this shit happened for like 70 years before you even knew Marvel was a thing.
Yeah, like, and it's ridiculous. And you're telling, oh, you know, it's not Norrin Rad anymore. It's like, okay, dude, do you know how many fucking Heralds of Galactus there were? Probably not. Like, I don't know.
Johnny and Storm again, was for a while.
Yeah, and again, like, who cares? Like, why do you care so much? It's just like, as soon as, like, anyone, as soon as these fucking incels see a woman on screen or somebody that's not white, they just freak the fuck out. Like, oh, it's an agenda. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, it's just, it's tiring at this point. Like, it's just like, it just takes the life out of me. It's so boring. It's such a boring ass conversation.
Yeah, they're awful. I hope they all die.
I ended up watching Love and Thunder with my family a second time, and I enjoyed it. Like, again, like, it's perfectly cromulent. It's fun. It's light. Like, I don't know. It's the greatest
thing. I need to watch it again. I just saw it the one time in the theater, and I was like, that was good. It's just, I think, same thing. I was expecting Ragnarok all over because it was effectively the same cast and crew.
Yeah.
And you're right. Ragnarok, you're tracing a dragon because that movie is just too goddamn good.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, it's fine. It's fine. It's light. It does what it needs to do. It's fun. I don't know.
It's very low stakes.
I just feel like everybody's like, I don't know. Everybody's so eager to be like, oh, Marvel failed. It's like, who gives? Like, first of all, are you an investor? Like, first, that movie made a ton of money, first of all. And second of all, who cares? Why is the box office even, why is it every time one of these things comes out, it's like, oh, it didn't make as much money as the last one. Like, are you an investor? Why is this part of the discourse? Like, did you like the movie or not? Like, I don't care why that much money it made. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, the problem
with the money argument is that's the only thing, the only way anything gets made, like the fucking.
Yeah, but here's the thing, like, dude. Like Marvel movies are too big to fail. Like, they're not going to stop. Like, you know what I mean? Like Disney, Snow White.
It's gonna take a long time of failures before they say, you know what, maybe we should stop making Marvel movies.
No, yeah. But that's not what I'm getting at is like, it's not that. It's that the reason that, like, when I went to the Minecraft movie and I saw, first of all, I was at a Minecraft movie. Second of all, like, all the previews are either sequels or direct reboots. It's like, no one wants to take risks. Because there's no new ideas. They need to make sure everything's like an established IP that will make a ton of money. And that sucks. Like, there's nobody. Like, I don't think Drive could be made nowadays. I'll be 100% honest with you. I don't think studio would back it.
It might. Like, I mean, it would be something that was on like Netflix or something like that. I don't. It getting a theatrical release, I don't see anymore. I mean, maybe because you have Ryan Gosling, who is a marketable star, but that's about it.
But I mean, like, it's like they're doing a shot-for-shot live-action remake of How to Train Your Dragon, a movie I love. It's a good movie, but it's like shot-for-shot, line-for-line. The reason is money. Like, it's just because they know it will make money. Like, there's no one taking, like, I'm becoming jaded, but, like, every time I see previews for movies, I'm like, yeah, that's just something part two or something part three or remember this, it's back and now in POG form. Like,
yeah.
Like, what's the last risky, like, Everything Everywhere All at Once? Risky movie?
Well, I mean, like, I didn't see it this weekend. I'll probably see it next weekend. But that new Ryan Coogler movie looks interesting.
I'm very excited to see that.
Is it Sin? That looks cool.
Sinners,
Sin, but remember, what was the movie you and I were trying? We were trying to see Boy Kills World, and it didn't make it in the theaters.
It didn't even, six days. It was a week. It was out of theaters in
It was released on a Friday, and then you and I tried to see it the next Saturday, and it was nowhere. It wasn't just not at the theater we were at. It was nowhere to be found.
That shit was wild. I've never seen a movie last for 5 days in a theater. That is absolutely insane.
And that's just, it's like you got to give the movie a chance to have some legs, but like, no, it's just like, ugh. Sorry.
And even Everything Everywhere All at Once, I think, was like lightning in a pan too. I mean, you know what I mean? It was like, it was a movie that like hit, I mean, it's a good movie and it hit like, it crossed over, right? Because it's an A24 movie, but it actually like made a lot of headway like in normie circles. And
But it didn't have like a giant cast from a star perspective.
Oh, no. Oh,
but like, when's the last like wholly original IP that has like really like made a gigantic splash since then? Because I'm not trying to just glaze the movie more. I'm racking my brain.
The only thing I can think of would be like Oppenheimer. I mean, that was a very huge movie.
That was good, but yeah.
I mean, there's not
a real bomb and a real man.
Sure. Yeah, but I mean that was a pretty big. That's a big. But also, that's got Christopher Nolan behind it. He's marketable in and of himself. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. But you're right. Yeah, you're
Barbie
not wrong.
Ran neck and neck with it, and that's based on a toy. Like, I mean, give me something fresh.
Sure.
Oppenheimer is not an original idea. That should have happened.
Well, I know, but
sure, it's the anti-original idea. It's a fan.
I don't know. I mean, I'm stretching. I don't disagree with either one of you. Anyway, I'm sorry, Alec. Continue.
No, I mean, that was it. I just,
yeah.
Thor Love and Thunder is a joy. It's fun. It's not incredible, but it's not bad like people make it out to be.
No, I agree. I totally agree.
Gogs.
I watched. Well,
first of all, start with Godzilla. What did you think of 2014's Godzilla?
I actually was with it until Cranston died. I was like, okay, this is
the first 15 minutes are great.
it's like the first like 45 or whatever it is. Like, I'm like, this is kind of this is interesting. This is competent. Like, all right, what are we doing? Like, all right, like, what is happening? And then after he dies, and then it's on Aaron Taylor Johnson's back, it's just tragedy follows that guy across the Pacific, and no one acts in a way that any human would ever act to anything ever at all time. Like, why are we halo jumping? It looks cool, but like, I'm pretty confident the monsters don't care.
You can't see it. The movie is so fucking dark. Like, you can't see anything in most of that movie.
And, like, all of these monsters have stealth mode. Like, they are shaking the earth. Like, you can't just have a lightning flash reveal and the monster is right there.
Yeah, doesn't work. When they're seven stories tall. Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, and then, like, all of a sudden, like, Godzilla was an active part of destroying your city and you guys are kind of, like, rooting for him now. Like, I don't, like... I guess maybe, like, and I'm not the biggest... I don't know enough Godzilla to know...
You know plenty. Like, you know enough.
But
to know, really.
In Japanese canon, did he make the heel turn to babyface and like defend the planet from all other threats?
It depends on the era of Godzilla that you're watching. So you got two kinds of Godzilla movies, right? You have the initial original Godzilla movies where Godzilla is the threat and Godzilla is the villain. But then you get into the 60s, into the Showa era, and that's like the more like kind of corny, like Monster of the Week kind of movies. And then it becomes like a wrestling match where like Godzilla, like they kind of nerfed him and he's not the villain anymore. But I mean that, and we talk about it on the show, that took like progression. And this movie has such a hard time with showing Godzilla doing anything bad. And Sean said it, and he's absolutely right. This is the first movie, right? This is the tentpole movie. Why does he have to fight two monsters? And also, the monsters are boring as shit. Like they're not
Mothra, right? Are they anything from canon?
No, they're completely original. They look like the fucking bugs from Starship Troopers, or they look like the bugs from Helldivers. Like they're just very generic and boring. And what I don't understand is you have 40 plus years of Godzilla history in Japan, like steal some of those designs, or like you can just take the designs and as a jumping off point and make them Americanized. Like I will say one of the only positives I can give that movie is the redesign of Godzilla is not bad. Like Godzilla looks good.
He looks cool.
He looks good. He looks new enough to be like a new version of Godzilla, but he still retains, like that iconic Godzilla look. I thought they did a great job with that. Unlike, the 99 or 2000 Godzilla, whatever it was that made him a fucking dinosaur. It looked fucking stupid as hell.
Yeah. Well, the Mutos, which are just massive unidentified terrestrial organisms, which is stupid. the movie just loses its way. So I think all in all, I'm not giving it a zero, but I give it like a two. Like the first half, the first 45 minutes, I'm like, okay, maybe this movie's not that bad. And I was like, oh, there it is.
Yeah, no, it's not bad.
and like Elizabeth Olsen, I love her, but she is just willy-nilly sending her family places and never checking on them.
Well, she also
level events. Like
she also like disappears for like the last hour of the movie. Like I forgot she was in the movie until she shows up at that, you know, rescue shelter at the very end. It's like, oh yeah, she's in this movie. Like
she just put her kid on a bus and the bus went on the bridge and then the bridge got destroyed. And she's not like, I hope my kid's okay.
Yeah, it's a mess. It really is. It's a total mess.
All right. So that's Godzilla. I finally finished Civil War.
Ah.
Jesus. Didn't you start that like a month ago?
A month ago. I did. Yeah.
It took me a minute to get back to it.
More about Alex Garland later.
I don't know. I don't know if I care for the ending of that movie.
Yeah, it's a movie like, I kind of soured on. As
it kind of falls, like the action's cool. The cinematography's cool. The story isn't, and maybe it's not meant to be. Maybe I'm trying to just make excuses. Like there's not the story isn't fleshed out enough for me. But maybe that's not the point. The point isn't to know why it's happening. Just it's to know that it's happening and it's terrible. Yeah.
You're not wrong. Like I talked about this with Anthony, and I think the biggest problem with that movie is it doesn't really have anything to say. And what it does have to say is very like surface level. And it's like war is bad. It's like, yeah, I know. And I
think
you expect more from Alex Garland, like a guy that writes thought provoking shit.
Well, is it war is bad or is it more like the extents that we're going to go for notoriety or fame or obsession will dehumanize us? Because I said that's sort of how
that's there too. I don't disagree with that.
Like you could see the young spoiler alert for Civil War, I guess. Like you could see the young photojournalists. You basically get photojournalists. You get journalists at all stages of their career coexisting at once in this crazy event. And all how they're coping with it and all how they're, you know, approaching it. And it's like, you've got this young girl who's like the prototypical Kirsten Dunst and then her mentor, Kirsten Dunst. And this is like the straw that breaks the camel's back. Like Kirsten Dunst has finally hit, her character finally hit a bridge too far where she can no longer bear witness and has to step in and be a part of it to her own detriment.
Yeah.
But then as a result, the young version of her almost disregards it with like sort of a cold, like you can already see, like you already know where this is going to go. Right. Like I'm saying, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was really, the action sequences were tremendous. Like, and it was ambitious.
That's the best part of the movie. Like the urban combat stuff I thought looked really, really good.
And it's brutal. And it's like, it's not, It's disconcerting, but that's the message I took from it. But I guess I was hoping for a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree.
But like maybe that wasn't the point. Like the point wasn't to understand what brought us to this or what the result or even who the good guys were. Like I'm not even sure who the good guys were.
I feel like the movie is like there aren't any. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like they're in the middle of everything. So like trying to figure out the morality of it. But then at the same time, you know, if you listen to Alex Garland interviewed about it, like he's like, it's explicitly about like Trumpism and stuff, but I don't really think that carries over very well. They don't do a very good job at fleshing out like the ideology of either side. Like it's a movie that needs like another draft. Like, I don't know. I feel like he had a lot of ideas, but he didn't flesh them out very well. Yeah. And again, like to Sean's point, I know he's not here, but to Sean's point, like it's about like journalists, but like it feels like it's a movie about journalists from the fucking 60s and 70s. But like we don't live in that world anymore. Like at one point she's like uploading her photos to someone, but you don't know who. And it's like, I don't know. It doesn't feel relevant to now, but it's trying to be. I don't know. I have a very conflicted opinion on that film.
Well, the third thing I watched is something I have absolutely no conflicting opinions about. off of
Aliens.
The, off of the success of how much my Vance enjoyed the Minecraft movie and then how much my AJ wants to see the Minecraft movie, I was like, well, you guys got to sit down and watch School of Rock. So we watched School of Rock.
I love that
and
movie.
And that movie's a ton of fun.
It's yeah, that's just a great movie.
It's just a blast. It is light and fun and engaging, and it is the songs stick to your ribs, and it is a good movie. So yeah, just a good movie.
I like that movie a lot.
And it was, I think that was, I want to say that was like where Jack Black made the turn to sort of more of a family friendly, like,
yeah,
I think that was pre Kung Fu Panda, but it was kind of like
right around the same time. I also would've,
like, I think the only Tenacious D song I can play Vance is Tribute. And
play him what's the You Don't Always Have to Fuck Her Hard song.
Yeah, like I was like, there's like, you know, it's interesting to see how his career, he almost did Eddie Murphy, like he's made that hard turn into family friendly. I mean, to his credit, and it's great, it works. And
you can make a lot more money that way.
Yeah, 100%. But School Rock, banger, kids love it. They've watched it probably 3 times since. So that's it, TJ.
I'm a big fan of the porn parody School of Cock, starring Jack Black Cock. That's a pretty good movie. I watched one thing. I was gonna watch 2 things, but I just don't have time anymore. I wanted to go see Sinners, like I said. But me going to see 2 movies in one day is just not gonna happen. So I watched the new Alex Garland movie, Warfare.
Oh no.
And I loved it. I think it's brilliant. It is basically just like it's very light on plot. It is essentially about these, I'm probably going to get the name of the battalion or whatever wrong, but I want to say that it's a group of Marines that are in the Iraq war, and they are basically trying to find a sniper point for Navy SEALs. They say in the very, very beginning of the movie, but I forget, but it doesn't really matter. Basically, they are in the middle of the Iraq war. They hold up in this house. And it's just the situation that happened in real life. The guy that that co-wrote it is one of the characters in the movie. And also, this guy, I've seen this guy in a bunch of stuff. He's the discount Tom Hardy. He's the lead in the FX show Shogun. And he was in that movie I really liked called Calm with Horses. His name, he has a very gog-sounding name. His name is Cosmos Jarvis. Cosmos Jarvis is his name. He's a British guy. Yeah. He's really, really good in the movie. Everybody's really good in the movie, but it is like, it is very intense. It is very realistic. Like, I think Alex Garland's point in this movie was to just make as accurate, like, it feels like a documentary. It doesn't really feel like a movie. It feels like they had a camera in the room when all this shit was happening, and it is brutal, and the sound design is absolutely chilling. Like, there's a part where, I mean, no spoilers, but there's a part where an IUD goes off, like, kind of out of nowhere.
IED, an inner uterine device.
Yeah, IED, excuse me, thank you. An IUD, yeah.
Hey.
Webster's Dictionary defines IUD as love springs eternal. I don't get it. It's really fucking good, and it shows like the fucking horrors of war. And the thing that I don't understand, and one of the, like, the top voted Letterboxd reviews is this guy ranting about how this is like a pro-war movie. I don't understand how you watch this movie and come away with it being pro-war. Like, these guys are basically getting turned into hamburger for nothing, like for absolutely nothing. I mean, we all know the context of that fucking war. It was absolutely pointless. It was on false pretenses in the first place. We gained nothing. We did nothing. And you have these young men that are getting shredded for nothing. And then they focus a little bit on, obviously, they take over this house. Well, there's a family that lives in this fucking house. And, like, think they don't ever really get any voice lines, but, like, they show them a lot, and they have children, and, you know, they are stuck smack dab in the middle of this conflict that they want no part of. They're not militants. They're not part of, you know, ISIS or whatever. and they're going to be traumatized for the rest of their lives because their fucking living room turned into a fucking meat grinder for 2 hours. And I thought it was really, really good. I thought it was really powerful. I liked it quite a bit. It's a very big departure from Alex Garland, because again, there's like really no plot, no character, you know, there's no like character arcs or anything. This is real life. But it's really good. It's right up there with like, you know, Come and See or a Black Hawk Down, as far as just like gruesome, realistic, like military combat. They do, I thought was one of the more interesting aspects of the movie, is they don't really focus on the Iraqi side of things, like the militant Iraqi side. Like it's almost like Dunkirk, where you barely see them. Like they're there as a threat and they're getting shot at, obviously, but like it's not like there's like any moment to like vilify them. I mean, obviously, you know, it's one of those things kind of like in Civil War, where you're just in the middle of it. It doesn't really matter, you know, the politics of it when you're getting shot at. And I don't know. I highly recommend it. I think it's really, really good. I'd recommend seeing it in a theater, because again, the sound design and the overall direction I thought were really, really incredible. But yeah, it's a good one. I think Alex Garland's back in my good graces, because I thought it was really excellent. And I, again, it's like watching Platoon and being like, yeah, this is pro-war. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Platoon, I could ever. Who could possibly?
Platoon's another good, like, sister film to this, where, like, it's clearly talking about, you know, the horrors of fucking American imperialism and, like, how shitty it is and how these guys basically are just there to do a job. And it's not like any of them are like, yeah, let's kill those fucking, you know, Iraqis. Let's get them. Like there is one character in the movie that's like comes into, at one point they get like reinforcements and this guy's like super gung ho. And they're all just like, dude, shut the fuck up. Like, and it's always funny because there is always that guy, right? There's always that fucking like, you know, fucking little dick cocksure asshole that's like, yeah, well, it's fucking rah, like, rah. And like
Tom Sizemore and Bringing Out the Dead, right? Like,
yeah, but it's really good. All the cast is excellent. Like I said, that Cosmo Jarvis is really good. I always forget his fucking name. Will Poulter is in it. He's really good. He plays like the
He looks jacked.
I mean, they're all pretty big in this, but he plays like I don't know anything about the fucking military, but he plays like the squad commander or whatever. I'm probably getting his rank wrong, but he is in the middle of that explosion and it just wrecks him. He's like basically shell shocked, for lack of a better term, throughout the whole movie. And you just see it in his eyes. Like he just, you know what I mean? Like it just shows how unnatural it is to be in combat and like what these guys have to go through. Again, I can't say enough good things about it. It's a very powerful film. I really enjoyed it. So check it out.
Right on.
But that's all I watched. I started to watch, that other Andy Sedaris film I talked about last week, but I was too tired and I didn't watch it. It is funny though. The guy, the lead who's supposed to be like this fucking like cool, like hot action guy is clearly gay, which is very funny to me. Cause like, you know, there's all these naked women around him. And he's like, oh, you guys are crazy. Like, it's like, why did you cast this guy? He's clearly gay. But, I will have a full review of that next week. But yeah, that's all I watched.
Did you know, when we were sitting there looking at Alex Garland's stuff, and maybe we did know this, I don't recall.
He directed this. Dread?
No, I knew. No, he wrote Dread.
Yeah. He also directed it. Shadow directed it.
Did you know he wrote the Good Devil May Cry game?
He wrote DMC?
Yes.
I fucking love DMC. I had no idea. No, that's amazing.
Know what else he wrote?
What?
Enslaved: Odyssey to the West.
That game fucking rules.
No, I think they're way. Both aren't they both Ninja Theory?
Yes, they are. Well,
he wrote both of those. Both, and for those playing the home game, both of those games are tremendous.
I don't care like, what anybody
from a
says.
Story
people fucking standpoint. Shit on DMC, but that game fucking rules.
DMC kicks the pile of ass. Like it's got the best story of any Devil May Cry game.
Next thing you're going to tell me that he wrote fucking Metal Gear Revengeance, which I also love.
That'd be awesome, but no, he did not. But anyway, I just thought that was really
I had no idea.
I thought it was wild. I didn't realize that.
I fucking love DMC. It's great. Go play it. You can get it now for like $5. I highly recommend it.
And the combat's a ton of fun. It's all about Slurm. It's fucking great.
Dude, it's so good. You fight like a personified Fox News as one of the bosses. It's amazing.
Yeah, I might replay it now just for fun.
You can get it on Steam. I think it's literally like $4.
I think I already have it on Steam. Just run it back. There it is. Anyway.
All right. Drive.
2011's Nicholas Winding Refn's Drive. Movie opens, and the movie is just cool from the beginning. Movie stays cool.
Soundtrack in this movie, 10 out of 10.
Soundtrack, 10 out of 10. Soundtrack.
Amazing.
Just rule. It's just, what'd you call it? Dark wave, synth wave? What
it's
do you
synth
call
wave.
It?
It's synth wave, but like, it's funny, right? Because this movie like inspired so much shit after it, but this like really kicked off the whole synthwave thing. Because I mean, it's still going strong now, but like if this movie never came out, that synthwave revival probably doesn't happen. The game Hotline Miami wouldn't have happened because the creators of that game, it specifically cite Drive as an influence. That's why what's his name? Jacket wears a fuck. That's why he's called Jacket. Like I know you're a big fan. I fucking love Hotline Miami. It's like one of my favorite games. But yeah,
it's also got the same color palette, right? So
like, the hot neon and all that shit. Yeah, of course.
So you the movie opens and it opens with like mid heist, but he's not. So Ryan Gosling, Baby Goose, is just hanging out in the behind the wheel of a car, if I remember correctly. And
no,
what's it open with?
Does it open with him talking to Bryan Cranston to get the Silver Impala?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was cutting back and forth.
It kind of is. Like he's on the phone. He's on the phone with the guy saying, you know, you have
You got 5 minutes of my time. Anything inside of that? Right. Okay.
And then he goes to Cranston and he's like, it's plain, you know, he says like, oh, it's plain Jane, like you asked for, but I put like a different engine in it or whatever.
Yeah. So he's got a Chevy Impala, the most popular car in Los Angeles at the time. He's hanging outside. Some sort of robbery is happening. This one Jamoke gets in the back of the car and he's like, oh no, where's my boy? And Ryan Gosling, you tell he's not jittery, but he's like, you got
I also love the little running. The little touch that he puts this fucking watch. He like ties the watch around his steering wheel. So he knows exactly how much time he has. He's listening to the Lakers game.
The Clippers game.
But that plays into what he does later, which I thought was super cool.
Yeah, I was like, I forgot him being a basketball fan, but no, he's just, yeah, so he's listening to the Clippers game. He's also listening to the Police Scanner.
I don't know if so much he's a fan, but like it plays into his cover because
I don't think he's a fan at all. I think it was part of his plot. I just I forgot about that part and I was like, oh, I guess he's just into basketball. Maybe that's what calms him down, like how a Baby Driver listens to music or whatever. So then other dude gets out and now we're off. The police are suspecting a Silver Impala. We get this cool sort of like cat and mouse chase through the city with like helicopters and cop cars and like him. It's not just him like gunning it full out. It's him like doing like fun little like duck around, turn the lights off, tuck under here, move there. And then there's a couple times where he just like goes hard and just is like outrunning a helicopter until like hears over the radio there's been a shooting and we need the helicopter at the shooting because that takes priority. And all this, it's cool. The guys in the backseat are just kind of like, not dumbfounded, but just kind of like in awe, or they're just kind of like, all right, neat. And then he sends it all the way, you know, through the city till he gets to the Clippers game right at like the last shot. Like he's listening to it on the radio, pulls in to the parking deck, just gets out of the car, doesn't even address the guys.
He just leaves them there. He's like, I'm done, you're
out. Puts on a Clippers hat and then just walks out right past the cops. And like all the crowd's leaving, so it's great cover. It's like Assassin's Creed level blend into the crowd. Like it is, and then now we know about the guy who doesn't get a name, might I add. Like
he's never named in the movie. Like I don't even know. I didn't look, but I don't know what he's even credited as in the credits.
Driver or the kid?
Is it just Driver? I'll look it up now. But like I know that the Cranston calls him the kid the whole time.
Right. So now we find out, and I might screw this up chronologically, but just bear with me.
It's fine. It's very, like, the movie.
It's
very,
a pretty straight line.
It's pretty simple, yeah. Oh, he's just credited as driver in the movie.
So he works for Brian. He works with Brian Cranston, who sort of, like, took him in off the street. Well, okay, so he moves into a new apartment building. The apartment next door is
Carey Mulligan.
Carey Mulligan. I almost said Bridget Moynihan. Carey Mulligan and her son. And, you know, he's kind of everyone. I think we all make the joke, like we all figured out later that he's autistic, but he's just sort of a weird stoic. He's got almost sort of the same vibes as he had in Only God Forgives, but like a little less brutal.
I mean, he's pretty brutal, but like, I don't know. In Only God Forgives, he's explicitly like an evil character.
Right,
like where in this movie, he's, I don't know. He's just kind of like,
no, he's just as brutal. You're right. He's not as divorced from his humanity as he is in that, but he is still kind of a blank.
Well, and also like, I feel like in this movie, he does resort to violence often, but like, it's never against like non-evil people. Like he only extracts his violence on like horrible people. Like,
I mean, the people that get it for a reason.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like he's out there like mowing down civilians and that kind of thing. Like he kills like mob people that are going to kill him too. So,
right. So he works for Cranston. Brian Cranston has a auto shop, and he is also, and you find out that Brian Cranston kind of took him in off the street. So you don't really know a whole lot about his background and never really gets into it. But Brian Cranston is working with Albert Brooks, who is amazing in this movie.
Well, Brian Cranston also is a stunt choreographer, a stunt.
Right, he's like a stuntman handler, and this is Baby Goose playing a stuntman again.
Yeah.
So he I guess Fall Guy brought this back. So Brian Cranston kind of handles all aspects, or most aspects of the various things that Baby Goose does. Baby Goose is a mechanic, Baby Goose is a stunt driver, and Baby Goose is a getaway driver. Albert Brooks is a patron or something. I don't understand their initial relationship, except that
Ron, he talks about it. Albert Brooks is a mobster, and he worked with, he used to be a movie producer in like the 80s. And he worked with Brian Cranston, who again was like a stunt choreographer. I think it's implied too that Cranston actually used to be a driver too. And Cranston got in with them, like owed them money. And then that introduces Nico, Ron Perlman's character, who is Albert Brooks's brother. And Albert Brooks is also like a violent thug, but he's a lot more like, at least
he's more of a gentleman thug.
Like front, he presents himself more like a businessman, whereas Nico, Ron Perlman, is a lot more brash and a lot more like, you know, doesn't give a shit about anything. But yeah, that's their connection. Like Cranston basically worked for Albert Brooks and then got on his bad side, like what always happens in mob deals, because, you know, he got too much money or whatever, couldn't pay him back. And then, so now he's like forever in his debt. Like there's a great line, there's a drop line where Ron Perlman's character sees Bryan Cranston. He's like, "How's the hip?" And Bryan Cranston just kind of quietly says, "I paid my debt." Like,
I thought he got into it with Ron Perlman. Ron Perlman like broke him up, and then it was almost like good cop, bad cop. Albert Brooks was like, all right.
Albert Brooks explicitly says that he worked with Bryan Cranston when he was a movie producer. Like he says that in the movie.
I know, but I thought it was Albert Brooks got him out of hot water, sort of, with Nico.
Yeah, you could definitely see that either way.
Albert Brooks and Ron Perlman are the mobsters that are sort of in play here that Brian Cranston has a connection to. So Brian Cranston goes to him and goes, "Listen, I think this kid's a tremendous driver. I want to get into stock car racing. I just need a cool $500,000 to get this stock car thing off the ground. What do you say?" And then Albert Brooks is like, "I don't know. Let me talk to this kid." And he tries to talk to Baby Goose, and Baby Goose is sort of stoic, and there's like some veiled threats and whatever
I think Baby Goose says about 10 words in this whole movie.
Yeah. And so then Al Brooks like, "All right, fine. I want a 70-30 split, and you get $350,000. And Brian Cranston's like down on his luck, just chasing. They even say something like he's never had good luck, or he's always
Well, hence his fucking broken hip
or this situation. So they're like, all right, cool, we're stock car racers now. This is exciting. Yay. Meanwhile, Baby Goose back at his apartment, he's befriending the young lady Irene and her son Benicio.
Yeah.
And like he's kind of acting like as a surrogate dad, but then you find out that what I think is the first time I ever saw Oscar Isaacs in my life, he is back and he's the dad. His name is Standard.
Yeah, you find out early on that Benicio's dad, Oscar Isaacs, is in jail. And then he gets released. And yeah, his name is Standard. Great, great name.
And you find out that, you know, there's sort of a little tension, like, hey, I heard you've been like filling in for me, how much you've been filling in with your penis. But that never happens. And then Baby Goose, I guess, goes out and he's going out and doing his thing. He's goosing it up. He runs into, I think, some guy. This is the first glimpse you get of this. I think he runs into somebody at like a coffee shop.
No, he's driving and he sees as he's pulling into the apartment parking lot.
No. Oh. Prior to this. Oh. Like he's out like a coffee shop or something, and somebody's like, Hey man, you were somebody recognized him from a previous job. He's like, hey, I got an in on another line if you wanna basically like, hey, if you want to drive for us again, you know, hey, we could use you. And like he stone cold looks at duty face, like, if you ever talk to me again, like I'll stomp your teeth through your back of your head or something.
And which he will. Which you see later on. Yeah.
So now at some point Baby Goose is coming home and Standard's back and he's driving through the parking lot of the garage of the apartment complex, and he sees that these couple thugs kind of like, well, someone looks suspect to him. So yeah, and well, maybe he recognized him from.
Well, I feel like you get the impression that Baby Goose obviously is like kind of privy to the criminal underworld. So like his radar goes off where he sees these two guys and he's like, oh shit.
So you find out that they beat the crap out of Standard, and they gave like his son a bullet for later. And long story short, when he was in prison, he had to pay. He owed protection money or owed protection. For making it through prison, I guess, unmurdered or unpenetrated, who knows for what. And now it's like very similar, presumably, to Bryan Cranston's situation. Like, yeah, you owe me $5,000. No, you owe me $50,000. Like, you owe me whatever I tell you, you owe me. Otherwise, we're going to kill your family. He doesn't know what to do. So Baby Goose, because he cares about Irene and Benicio, was like, listen, I can help you. Here's what I can do for you. I can help you drive for whatever. And they said, look, I'm supposed to go rob this pawn shop. And the pawn shop's got like 40 grand in it. I'm supposed to go rob it. And then that settles my debt. He gets hooked up with, this is all put together through Ron Perlman's like secondary, some guy named like.
This guy is like a huge piece of shit. Yeah.
Cody or whatever the hell his name is. No, Cook.
Cook, yeah.
And they're like, oh, by the way, here is
Christina Hendricks
from Mad Men.
Christina Hendricks shows up.
So they go to this pawn shop and they pull up and Baby Goose does his thing and they walk inside. And then this Chrysler 300 pulls up next to them. I forget what Baby Goose is driving, Mustang, I think.
That's a Mustang.
And Christina Hendricks comes out with this big bag. A couple big bags. Hey, and then Standard comes out, and it's like, all right, let's go. And then he gets shot repeatedly.
Yeah he's done.
So he's donezo. So they take off. So then we get this car race through the hills between them and this Chrysler 300.
This car chase is fantastic, though. I thought that it looked fucking great.
Like, it's dope.
Yeah.
They end up getting to some hotel where they're watching the news and they're hearing about this robbery. And they're like, yeah,
way more money than what they were told. There's like,
the news is saying that nothing was stolen. So they've got a bag with $1 million in it. They've got a news report saying an attempted robbery. They got away with nothing. So it's already super fishy.
Yeah.
They're trying to figure out, he calls Bryan Cranston. Cranston, he's like, what do I do? He He's like, let me talk to them. I'll get you out of this. So he calls the mobsters. The mobsters are the ones who set this all up, you find out. And then you later find out why, because they were trying to rip off some other mobster trying to move in. And they knew that this pawn shop was where this other mobster was holding money.
It was a dummy heist.
Yeah. And then Christina Hendricks cops to Baby Goose is going to beat the Christ out of her, because she cops to, like, okay, you were supposed to get the hold up was supposed to be held up. And he's like, all right, well, we got to find a way out of this. And then that's the end of Christina Hendricks, because her face gets exploded with a shotgun.
Yeah, she gets shotgunned pretty as violently as you can be shotgunned. It's brutal. Pretty brutal.
So then he fights his way, Baby Goose fights his way out of this situation. Now hold on. Did he beat up that Cooks guy before this, right? Like, no, he beat that guy up.
It's after, because he's trying after this, he knows that Cooks set them up. So he goes to that strip club where Cooks is, and this is where he walks down with a hammer. And then he does one of my favorite parts of this movie. Cooks's hand is just laying on this desk, and he doesn't even say anything. He just starts whacking his fucking hand with a hammer. And that's when he puts, like, the fucking bullet in his mouth and all that stuff. But he needs to get a hold of Nico, because he, at this point, Baby Goose doesn't know who is the big guy that set all this up. So he goes to Cooks, beats the shit out of him. And is like, you need to get your boss on the phone. And then they get Nico on the phone, and he's like, I'll drop off the money. And Nico's like, well, what's in it for you? And he's like, nothing. Or he's like, what? I do like this line. He's like, what do you get out of it? And Baby Goose goes, that's just it, to get out of it. Like, he has no interest in the money. He just doesn't want to be involved. And he obviously doesn't want Standard's family to get caught in the crossfire. So this is where this is like the falling action of the rest of the movie. Like, he's just trying to get the money back to Nico, but then Nico and Albert Brooks have a meeting, and, you know, this is, Gog said it already, this is where Nico explains that he was trying to rip off this other mobster, and then Albert Brooks is like, you can't do this, because if it comes out that you went after the family, then we're both dead. So then they have to basically burn notice everybody that knew about this holdup. So they have to get rid of that dickhead guy, Cooks. They have to get rid of him, who they kill immediately. Then they have to get rid of Brian Cranston, and of course they got to get rid of Baby Goose and ostensibly the girlfriend, or the Carey Mulligan's character and her son.
Now, I think, yeah, and I forget at some point Baby Goose goes to Carey Mulligan and he's like, hey, here's what happened. Here's I've got this money. You could take it and run away. And she doesn't want anything to do with it.
Right. Right.
They all get in this elevator, I think this is where this happens, because
Nico sends Nico sends one of his goons to go kill everybody, and it doesn't work out very well for that goon.
Yeah, so then that guy gets his head stomped in an elevator. Carey Mulligan is horrified. Baby Goose goes after Nico directly. First of all, Albert Brooks. There's a look that Albert Brooks gives to, is it Nico or Nino, whatever his name is, Ron Perlman's character, when they're in his, like, Chinese restaurant or pizza shop or whatever it is, before he kills Cooks, like, may I? It's like, yeah, go ahead, because he's like, we got to fucking start somewhere, and he just cuts this guy to ribbons.
Nino.
So then Albert Brooks goes to Brian Cranston. He's like, hey, so where's your driver? It's like, oh, he went to Mexico or something. He's like, all right, well, chatted up, and then it's ice cold.
This scene is so fucking haunting. He just fucking slices his fucking wrist open. He's like, shh, it's done. It's over.
He shakes hands with him, and then he's like, don't worry, it's going to be over, and you're done. Now the driver finds Albert Brooks like that, and he realizes that everything's going tits up. So he wearing this stuntman, this crazy-ass stuntman mask, for some reason, I guess.
He wore that mask in the very there's a scene in the very beginning of the movie where he does a stunt, and he's got that mask because he's doubling for the lead actor. So he keeps that mask, and the mask is weird as hell looking. It looks like a Stone Cold mask from Timu or something.
So then, he like basically sort of hunts down, Dino, and like as he's like driving, he does sort of like a stuntman Mike situation where he like kind of runs him off the road, then sets him up to be teed up off a cliff.
Yeah, that's just awesome.
Launches this car, and then he follows Nino into the ocean and either beats him to death or drowns him.
Oh, I assume he drowned him. Like, I do think it's funny. Like, it's not funny, but I think Nino is like completely fucked and knows it. And the whole movie, Nino acts like this fucking tough guy like the entire time. And then when it like comes down to literally his like life being in danger, what does he do? He like runs away. He like runs away to the ocean. I thought that was like a nice little touch. Like this guy who's like this big, like, you know, I'm a tough guy. Like he doesn't even fight for his life. He fucking runs away like a coward.
Yeah. So then he takes Nino's phone and he calls Albert Brooks's character. And he's like, listen, I got your money. Nino's, I guess, even if he says Nino's dead, but it's assumed so because it's his phone.
I think he knows. He's like, I think he's pretty, he knows what happened at this point.
So then you get some more great Albert Brooks where Albert's like, look, I'll let the girl and the boy live, but I can't make that promise to you. You're basically going to look, you're looking over your shoulder for the rest of your life. So like, it's very threatening. Albert Brooks, once again, is amazing in this.
And this scene's really cool because they do this like cross-cutting between their conversation and then the after part of their conversation. I really liked how this was shot. Like I thought it was interesting. They go out to the parking lot to do the exchange. Albert Brooks stabs Baby Goose, and then Baby Goose, I think knowing this was going to happen, because he makes a phone call to Carey Mulligan before this where he's like, I got to do something and I'm not coming back. Like it's like I'm not, he knows what's going to happen. So he kills Albert Brooks, but he gets mortally wounded. Like he's stabbed and it's implied that he's done, but he does leave the money. Like it's like, he doesn't want the fucking money.
The money and Albert Brooks are laying there dead on the ground. So at least
can you imagine going to that mom. Chinese restaurant, going out to your car and just finding a fucking bag of $1 million. Be like, hell yeah.
Well, if the corpse is there, I might have a second thought, but
like, I think I would still take a couple of stacks,
a couple of bands for the boys. And then Irene goes, checks on him in his apartment. He's gone, and the driver is driving off into the night to either go die or just continue.
He's definitely going to die. I mean, I think it's implied he's just literally riding off into the sunset. It's a very like Western kind of coded thing. Like he's done for. Like it's over. But he did, you know, he did what he sought out to do. Where he like, you know,
he saved
Carey Mulligan and Benicio are fine. Like they will be fine. So that's Drive.
And it's awesome.
I love this movie a lot. Like, I don't know. It's one of those things where this is like, to me, this is like the, I don't know. We talk about like nostalgia nowadays and how it gets like bastardized and it's like, it's too much like the references, the entire product. But this movie is like perfect in as far as it's definitely like a callback to the 80s. And like Westerns, this is also kind of like a neo-noir in a lot of ways. And I don't know. I just think it's like, it just hits all the right notes. And it's like, a lot of people have problems with Nicholas Winding Refn later on because he got a little too indulgent in like what he likes. I love all the same stuff he does. So I could watch, you know, a 10-minute silent scene in Neon in Only God Forgives, but that's not for everybody, and I understand that. But like this movie is just enough of his indulgences where it's not, it still moves. This movie moves at a clip. Like it, again, the story is very simple, but like it never drags. And I feel like once it gets started, like that once the heist goes bad, like the movie is all just, it's just going. Like, you know what I mean? Like I feel like it's perfectly paced. And it's great. Alec, Let's see. Was your favorite part of the movie, Alec, the glorification of the Ford Mustang?
No. I've never been a Mustang fan.
Oh, yeah, me neither, really. Even though I had
one. You had one.
I know. Yeah. I was kind of guilted. You liked that car. I was kind of guilted into buying that car. No, that was basically my mom's car. My mom was like, you got to buy it. I'm like, I don't want a sports car. And after owning one, I still never won another sports car. No, thank you.
No, I'd be much happier with the Impala than the
Mustang. Yeah, absolutely.
My favorite part was the total realisticness of him being able to get into a parking garage with a car while a playoff basketball game is letting out.
That is a fair point.
And even being able to approach it, let alone get into it, is insane.
That is a fair point. That is a very fair point.
Like, I've tried to get out of that arena garage when, like, wrestling events let out. That shit is impossible in Baltimore. I can't imagine in L.A.
Los Angeles.
A Clippers playoff game getting out and you being able to get a car in there.
That's a fair point.
Like, that shit is just, like, no man's land when an event ends.
True. That's a very good point.
Was this your first time? This wasn't your first time seeing this, was it, Alec?
Yeah, it's the first time I've seen this.
Well, is there anything we want to talk about before we get into Five Knuckle Shuffles? I feel like we talked a lot during the synopsis anyway, so. Anybody?
No, I just want to see Bryan Cranston do more stuff like this where he has weird accents.
Yeah, I thought he was really good. I mean, he's always good, but I thought he was
always good, but movie. I like the I don't even know what the accent he has is.
It is kind of odd. He's doing a voice.
Is this pre-Breaking Bad or post-Breaking Bad?
Or
is this during?
I think it's during. Post. Well, it's 2011. I feel like Breaking Bad started before that. I could be wrong.
I feel like it was like interesting to see him and Albert Brooks, two people. Like, because I just knew Bryan Cranston from Malcolm in the Middle at this point, because I hadn't gotten to Breaking Bad if it was happening.
Yeah, Breaking
Bad. Albert Brooks was just Hank Scorpio.
This was to like
see them both being so like.
Arch, so this was like so right dark. Towards this is like in like the hot zone of Breaking Bad because it started in 2008 and ended in 2013. So like you're in like the later
the midst season. Of it.
You're in like the later seasons of Breaking Bad at this point. I don't know when this was shot and all, but yeah. Also, Albert Brooks is incredible in this fucking movie. Like, I'm not, you know, I don't think I've ever seen him as this kind of character. And like, you know, I'm familiar with his like other films, but like this was, he was great. The idea to cast him in this role was wild, but it worked out quite a bit.
Yeah, when I was watching it, Stacy was, I think she came in as I started it or as I was finishing it. Mm-hmm. And she was like, she heard his voice and she's like, who is that?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, because we just watched the Simpsons movie recently. I was like, it's the guy from the EPA guy from the Simpsons.
Oh,
movie.
Yeah, that's she's right.
She's like, oh my God, I recognize the voice so much. And I was like, yeah, he did a bunch of Simpsons characters.
Yeah, he was Hank Scorpio. He was that guy that's like, tough love or tough luck. It's supposed to say tough love. Like, I forget that. It was some motivational guy. But he did a couple of different voices. But yeah,
also the guy where it's like we're gonna figure it out. We're staring each other naked in the front of the bed.
In front of the bed. Yeah, that's the same. That's Albert Brooks. All right. Well, Five Knuckle Shuffle time. Did John Cena wrestle last night, or is that tonight?
That's tonight.
Wow. In Wrestling Mania, I didn't watch any of it last night. I saw a post that said that with all the pre and post stuff between the two nights of WrestleMania, WrestleMania will be 16 hours long. I was like, who is asking for this? 16 hours of WrestleMania programming. Like, good night. Anyway, Alec, you're the wild card here. I need to know what you think of this movie. Go ahead, my friend.
I'm going to give it a 7.
All right. Hey, okay.
I liked it. It's more accessible than Only God Forgives.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and pretty much for most of what I've seen from Alex Garland, like I like most of his stuff. I like Annihilation. I like
this isn't Alex Garland.
This is
Nicholas
Winding. Oh yeah, I don't like anything Nicholas Winding.
There we are.
Bronson is atrocious.
Oh my God, how can you say that? It's so good. But I'm glad you like this one. See, I thought you would like this one because you have, I've noticed that you have a problem with like evil characters being the protagonists. Like you don't like it when there's no like morality in a film. But like, despite the violence of this movie, like all of Baby Goose's violence is done for just reasons. I thought you would, you would identify with that.
Yeah, I do, and I like that, and I like Ryan Gosling.
He's really good in this.
Yeah, he's really good considering he doesn't do much of anything. Yeah.
He's got a presence, though. There's a presence with his character. You know what I mean? Like, there's just something. He's got, like, a charisma in this role where he doesn't say a fucking word. But I don't know. He just commands the screen, you know?
But, yeah, I thought it was good. Probably my least favorite part of the movie was Ron Perlman's just loud mouth.
Yeah,
bullshit character. Like, this isn't the kind of movie I want to see Ron Perlman in.
Yeah, and apparently he was Jewish, but like adopted into the family. They bring that up like a couple of times. I don't know why. It seems kind of superfluous to the movie, but
yeah. But I want to see him in big stupid action movies, not smart movies.
Yeah,
he's not a smart actor.
Yeah, he. I mean, he's a big goon in this movie too. I mean, that's
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, 7. TJ. Right.
It's a 10 for me, dog. I fucking think this movie's a masterpiece. I love this movie a lot. I think everything fucking works. I think that like all the cast is really good, but it's also like it's a very small, intimate cast, but I feel like I know all these characters. We've said it 1,000 times on the show, but like my favorite kind of movie is tell me a simple story, but tell it well. This is a very basic movie. Like the plot is very A to B. And at points almost like a little too convenient that things kind of mash up the way they do, but it doesn't matter because it works so well. And I loved, you know, the car chases are really well done. The whole atmosphere of this movie is just super fucking cool. And I love the soundtrack. There isn't a thing about this movie I don't like. Like, I just find this movie to be a joy to watch. And I love his fucking jacket. His jacket's so fucking cool. And like, only he can wear it. Cause if you're the guy at the party wearing the fucking drive jacket, you're the biggest dork in the world. But I love this fucking movie a lot. And it's a 10 for me, dog. I am going to read Sean's review now since he texted us a review. Gogs, unless you wanted to do the honors.
No, you please.
Okay. Sean said, I know we say this a lot, but sometimes it's okay for a movie just to be cool. This is that movie. I know it suffers from Baby Goose's retroactive autism that makes us have to reevaluate all his roles. And it's a little bit of a Sigma male fantasy, but who gives a shit? Because Real Human Being might be the greatest, might be the single greatest soundtrack song ever. Scorpion Jackets are cool. America V8s are cool. I'm not going to say this next part. America's Synthie City Pop is cool. Christina Hendricks's huge tits are cool. Albert Brooks rules. Hammer Murder rules. I love this movie. 10 out of 10. Well said. Gox.
Yep. I'm also giving it a 10 out of 10. I'll echo all of the things you and Sean said. I can't objectively review this movie because I just really, really like it. There's so much. It's so well shot. The color is cool. The cinematography is cool. Like Albert Brooks and Bryan Cranston, and I mean, and Baby Goose, like, are all like. I'm trying to think if this is the first thing I saw where I was like, "Oh hell yeah, Baby Goose!" Like, I'm trying to think like what he did before this that I would have any interest in at all.
I want to say, and I could be wrong.
Other than Remember the Titans.
Well, I want to say this is like the first movie. This is like the first movie he did outside of all those like romance movies that he was like known for. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure that's the case.
So, like before this, he was in The Notebook. I still have never seen The Notebook. He's in Remember the Titans, but he wasn't a big part of that, right? He was.
Right.
He didn't have big roles, but like. I think his biggest role prior to this was The Notebook. Other than being like here and there, he was in a movie called Murder by Numbers, which I think I've heard of, but I never saw it.
I mean, The Notebook is arguably still his biggest role and what people know him the most for.
Sure.
Like 20 plus years later.
That's fair. But I remember seeing this and I was like, it's kind of like the same way I felt about, Cedric Diggory after what's that guy, Robert Pattinson, when I saw Good Time.
Who the fuck is Cedric Diggory?
That was his name. It's a Harry Potter movie.
Harry Potter.
I've never seen any of those.
Because, like, all I knew him from was Twilight. I was like, this guy sucks by association. And then I saw, I think, Good Time, or I forget what it was. I was like, oh, this guy's fucking got it. Like, this is great. And, like, I remember seeing this and be like, all right, it's that pretty boy from The Notebook. Let's see what this is about. I was like, oh, this is fucking dark. This is cool. Yeah. Like, this guy's got it too.
You know what he was in that I totally forgot about? Remember that Hercules show with Kevin Sorbo?
He was in that.
Well, they made a young Hercules version, and he was Hercules.
I didn't know that.
For 50 episodes.
That's hilarious.
That's wild. But yeah, I like, you know, soundtrack slaps. It's cool. Sean's right. Sometimes movies are just cool, and this is like, this is that. And it's got, well, we'll leave it at that, but it is influencing my pick for next week.
Okay.
I'm next in the order.
What is your pick next week? This was Sean's pick, by the way. I think I said that before.
So I'm willing to go one of two ways with this, and I'll leave it to the group. I was looking at Albert Brooks's filmography,
mm-hmm.
and turns out he was in Taxi Driver, which I don't think we've watched for the show.
He was in Taxi Driver?
He was.
Oh, yeah, of course he is.
Who's the female lead in that movie? Sybil
Shepherd. Oh, Sybil Shepherd. Oh, yeah, right. He works with her at the election.
In the election
campaign case. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it to you two. I could watch either one of these. So either Taxi Driver because of Albert Brooks, or Ron Perlman will take us to The Island of Dr. Moreau, which I don't believe we watched on the show.
I feel like we got to watch The Island of Dr. Moreau. I feel like
that's what I was thinking.
I think that's a better show movie.
And we haven't watched that for the show yet, have we?
No, we've talked about it briefly. Of course, Ron Perlman's in that. He looks like an animal man. Like,
he was Beast of Beauty and the Beast. They barely put any makeup on him.
Yeah. He was in, like, there's this old movie. My grandmother used to love it. There's this old movie from the 80s called Quest for Fire. Have you, either one of you,
heard of it?
Your grandmother loved that?
She loved that fucking movie. Yeah.
Isn't there a lot of rape in that movie?
Oh, yeah. It's weird. It's a fucking weird. Yeah. It's a caveman movie. And, like, Ron Perlman looks like a fucking caveman. It's like the role he was born to play.
Daryl Hannah, maybe?
Yeah, no, that's the other one. That's the you're thinking of, I know what you're talking about, Alec, and that is rapey. And that movie is, I want to say, that's Clan of the Cave Bear.
She loved that, too. It's written by the same person.
Grandmother was just really into caveman.
She
movies.
Loved that book, Clan of the Cave Bear, was like a series, and it was like her favorite book, and she loved the movies.
How'd she feel about Far Cry Primal? Was she a big fan of that?
Unfortunately, she didn't make it to Far Cry Primal, but she probably would have loved it. All right, next week, Isle of Dr. Moreau.
No, it's Island. It's Island. The Island of Dr. Moreau. I think the original book might be the Isle of Dr. Moreau.
I've never seen it.
That's not possible.
It's one of those movies where I've seen so much about it. Like, I watched that documentary about
the Richard Stanley documentary. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched that, and I've seen, like, obviously, like, South Park had that whole Dr. Mephisto character, and like, Austin Powers. And like, I've seen so much about that movie. I feel like I've seen it, but I've never seen it.
How do you know? That's wild to me.
I've never seen
this movie. At least twice. Alec, have you seen this movie before?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, boy.
I'm excited.
Oh, boy.
I'm excited.
All right. The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Next week, Island of Dr. Moreau. You guys know what to do. Eat your own ass. Happy Easter. He is risen and all that.
R-I-Z-Z-I-N.
And Alec's out. All right. Bye, guys. I have to poop.
See you, buddy.